Hello and welcome to a podcast where we take fictional science from comics, movies, TV, etc. and try to make it factually, scientifically, possibly real. I'm Stoby.
I am known as Forgan.
And I'm Stu.
And this is The Science of Fiction.
Pick up the tricorder, put it on your head. Scanning the planet, see if anyone is dead. Autonomous car driving in Zanzibar. Beam me up, Scotty, I'm not that far. Androids hoovering, tearing up the place. Flip phones and conference calls, friends in outer space. Astrophysicists sitting on my knee. Asking aliens if they like a cup of tea.
Fiction, to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction, baby, to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction to the science of fiction.
Welcome back to episode 5 of season 2 of the Science of Fiction's End of the World series. As always, I'm joined by silently giggling Stu.
Hello!
And shoulder bobbing Forgan.
Hello.
Sorry, Dr. Forgan and Mr. Stu. But we are joined by two special guests as well.
Yes.
Yeah, we
special.
Are.
Special.
Special. Emphasis on that. We are joined by American Football Cast Andrew and Big Dog Books Podcast Stuart.
Hello.
Hi, guys. Andrew, how you doing?
Yeah, not bad, you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. You've had a bit of a tiring day, haven't you?
Yeah, 7 hours in the car today, so yeah.
Brilliant.
Great. Ready to sleep.
It's all right, we've been here for 5 hours recording podcast.
We're ready.
Stuart, how's things?
Aye, good. Yeah. So,
been working away all day today, so. Yeah.
And by this point, your three that you've got in the bag will probably have been released. Because this will be out in like 10 weeks' time.
Yes.
We really, really hope so.
And Forgan, Stu. It's been like an hour since we last recorded. Yeah. Things changed.
We've been up and down the stairs again. I quite possibly had a heart attack and I don't know about it.
It sounded like a real struggle when you came back to the door.
I'm not going to lie, it was a struggle the first time.
Yeah. Our beards have grown by like an extra millimetre since we started this.
So this episode is hopefully slightly cheerier than the last four we've had anyway.
Yeah, it's been a bit grim, hasn't it?
Why have we been talking about world end of the world scenarios for 4 hours? You talk about a lot of down systems.
Yes. You do.
Go home and be like, what are we up to tomorrow? Doesn't it matter?
I just want something happy.
He's just told 7 me. Billion years will all be dead.
My Alexa's going to kill me.
So we thought we'd do a little. I'm having a brain malfunction.
A cannibal, or?
Usually this happens to me. It's really weird being on the other side of it.
Oh, I'm watching someone have a brain meltdown. I've done well up till now. I'm having a Q&A. So we've had some questions coming in from various sources across the local friends, family, British podcasters. So we'll get down to some of the best ones. And see how we get on with them.
It's mostly, we've got some of our own as well.
We've brought some on, and Stuart and Andrew have come prepared to
ask other people questions.
They're the guy in the room. Yeah. I speak on this man's behalf. It's so fine. He's been in a car for 7 hours.
Last week when I came home from a holiday, got into Manchester at half 2.
Where did you go on holiday?
I was in a place that rhymes with market.
Turkey?
I was in Turkey, it was awesome. But got into Manchester at like 2:30 in the morning. Left Manchester at 4 in the morning, drove straight up the road. I feel for you 7 hours.
Was there much to do in that hour and a half that you hung about in Manchester?
Get off the plane, get my bags, get to the hotel, get the car and get going. It was... It was brutal, so I feel for you with your 7 hours there. I struggled with 4.5. So,
4.5 what?
Hours. Did it twice. First question then we've got is from Dave from Not For The Dinner Table podcast, who asks, what he'd like to know is, what happens to the nuclear power plants after a cataclysmic event? So he mainly thinks about this while watching The Walking Dead. population has been decimated, but these plants still need to function, or what happens with them? Mm. Do they go into meltdown and explode?
That's a good question. I think it depends on like what time period you're talking about. If like modern nuclear plants have loads of fail-safes, right? So the way that you shut down a nuclear plant is you have these things called control rods. Who's watched Chernobyl here?
I've seen three episodes, not five.
I've watched a Bond movie that has a lot of control rods in it.
Yes. Yeah. So the point of the control rods is that they basically slow down the nuclear reaction that's happening inside the plant. So I imagine that if there's been like a few days, I'm saying rods a lot, aren't I? Sorry.
the giant bottle of Pepsi Max.
So he's trying to subtly open a bottle of Pepsi Max in the background, and it's just
it was beautiful. No one would have noticed if you had to start sniggering.
We would have got away with it.
That's why you time it for when someone's talking loudly.
I see. I better speak louder next time then. So the control rods go in into the reactor, and that slows the reaction down. And if the reaction gets below a certain level, it basically stops. So I think what's probably going to happen in that case is that if you know there's been no action for a certain amount of time, the rods will just automatically come down. That's what I would imagine a good program would do. And yes, I'm going to stop saying rods.
It was more that if there's no action, they'll come down as well. I'm just being immature now. But yeah, no, that's interesting to know that the fail-safes are there. And is that a modern thing? Or
I mean, it's relatively modern, but the main sort of design of a nuclear plant hasn't changed that much for like 50 or 60 years. So that as long as you have some kind of control program that says, right, if I think there's a problem. And there, you know, there's also for things like if there's an earthquake or if there's anything that could potentially pose a hazard, the control rods go all the way in and they stop the reaction.
And that's just an automatic thing.
And it's just like you don't even get to.
Once it gets to a certain level, they'll be like, oh, it closes down.
Yeah.
Even without human interaction to say.
Yeah. I mean, it should never get to that stage. Yeah,
exactly.
But yes, they should.
The control rods, will they outlast the nuclear material in the reactor? Will there be a point where the control rods run out and then there is a point where the reaction is left to?
I don't think so. I mean, the construction of the rods is such that you're going to basically be able to keep the reaction from kind of taking over as long as you need to. I guess what will happen is that over time the material will decay kind of slowly and lose more of its power. I don't think there's a huge risk there. I guess the problem is that if something happens to the plant afterwards, like if the rods themselves are destroyed, or if something happens to the containment of the reactor itself, then something could happen. Yeah. I mean, basically the things you want to make sure is that the environment itself is sealed, the control rods are in the right place, and that should be it. I think it's actually not a big risk. I think a bigger risk is if something happens initially during like whatever apocalyptic situation you're talking about. Like, so Fukushima was an example where there was a big earthquake. It was much bigger than they'd anticipated, and there was breaches in the reactor, you know, while the reaction was still occurring. And that was where a lot of the problems came from.
Right, okay, cool. So the control rods, you were saying if something happens, they just drop right in. How are they powered?
They're electrically powered, yes. So the power plant itself is also powering itself.
So it's self-powered.
Self-powered, yeah.
Okay, the question would be, what if the electrical power, the supply is cut off completely to the control rods then? Mm. What happens then? I guess it's just meltdown, boom, kind of thing.
If your control rods malfunction, then yes, your nuclear reaction could be left unchecked to grow. And if you've got too much fuel, yeah, you will have a meltdown. Yes. So there could be a circumstance where, you know, like in Chernobyl, they're running tests. So you might be using the reactor in a format that's not meant to be used, and then all of a sudden you get like killed by zombies or whatever, whatever it might be.
As you do,
right? You know, a standard risk, and then
I remember that SOP.
Yeah.
If you're currently being attacked by zombies, please put down all nuclear.
Yes. Press the control rod button now. So, I could see a set of circumstances where maybe you're doing something with the reactor where the control rods then don't deploy, right? But a lot of the fail-safes are around the fact that the nuclear reaction itself drives the control rods. So that if the nuclear reaction is going, the control rods can still work.
Yeah.
If the program failed, that would be different. So if, you know, if there was a virus that hacked the system and then maybe something failed there, Yeah, pretty bad.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that one. Stuart, you had a question you wanted to ask?
Yes, so my day job is to sell comic books, so I was trying to think of times in comics that the world has come to an end or ended. Mm. And one of my favourites is from an old issue of Justice League of America. So the planet, Earth, is teleported from one part of space to another by fifth dimension Olympus. Right.
Okay.
But that's not the big problem.
Okay. That's not the big problem.
This is all standard.
Yeah, it's like, that's metaphysics. That's fine.
That sounds fairly right.
So the fifth dimension.
We don't deal with magic in this podcast.
So, fine. They move the planet because they're doing something else and they don't notice and they've moved Earth.
Okay.
So to get Earth back to where it's supposed to be, obviously Earth is in chaos because it's just been pulled out of the sun and gravity and all the rest of it. So
yeah.
The planet's safe. So what Wonder Woman does is takes her golden lasso and wraps it all the way around the Earth multiple times and then just drags it back through space to where it's supposed to be. Uh-huh. And I just wondered what would happen if you tried to tie a rope around the Earth and drag it like a chain.
Just very briefly, I have two little points to add to that. First of all, also happens in Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. Second of all,
sure, that's where they got it from.
Yeah, of course. The same story. The second question is, if the Earth is then tied up in her lasso of truth, does the world have to tell the truth?
What happened was everything that everyone believed to be true became true.
Okay. I accept that. That's fine. Yeah.
Superman turned into God. Batman stopped existing because no one knows Batman's real, so he just vanished. Flash turned into a lightning bolt.
Santa came into.
So everything that people believed became
really
true.
Really unfortunate for the guys with paranoid other parts.
Yeah.
Suddenly a lot of like made up things have become real.
Yeah.
So that was the sort of setting, was the Earth is being pulled back into place.
Yeah.
And during that, the event in the comics was truth has run rampant on the Earth.
Okay.
But yeah.
So what happens to the Earth when you pull it?
So she just wraps a chain, basically a chain around the middle of the Earth, essentially the equator.
What if you had to tow the Earth? Okay, we need to think about this. So we do have.
I thought I'd start with an easy one because I've got some more.
I've got an interesting follow up to this.
So fast. So we do know that there are planets that do not orbit a star and are kind of wandering through the galaxy. That they used to be around a star, they may be formed around that particular star. They've come into an interaction with our planet and been kicked out. We have fairly strong evidence that that's happened. And we know of a handful of candidates for that. So planets can leave the solar system. They don't need Wonder Woman or a fifth dimensional imp. They can just go. All you need is gravity and a good push.
They need a referendum.
By 52 to 48%, this planet has decided that it's going to leave the solar system. So that is true, and if you were on that planet as it left, you probably wouldn't notice too much going on, unless you were, if you happened to be sitting on the part of the planet that was close to that part, you might feel a very strong tide for a few days, and then as you get kicked off and throw away, then things will just be back to normal. It's just you moving through the universe, right? We move through the universe right now, and we don't really care. So that bit seems okay. If you just put like a big rope and pulled the Earth, how strong is the lasso?
It's as strong as she believes it is, because it's the lasso of truth.
Okay, so if it's just as strong as you like, then if you pull, and you pull hard enough, because I assume she can pull as hard as she likes.
She's Wonder Woman.
Yeah, she's Wonder Woman.
As hard as she believes, yeah.
How does she believe? Surely, like, would that not just cut the Earth in two?
Do you think it would be soft enough that it would just go...
Like a piece of cheese.
Well, because at some point, you're pulling, and then the cord itself is going to come into contact with like the land or whatever it is you're pulling against, and something's going to have to yield, right? So you're putting a huge amount of pressure on that little bit because you're trying to pull an entire planet. So there's a lot of force being put into a very small area.
Yeah, that one line.
On that single line, right? So the pressure is enormous. So yeah, you're going to start cracking the Earth's crust. So you crack through that a bit, and then maybe you get into the mantle, and like there might be some ridiculous volcanic activity happening, like around the lasso, as you're like, whoopsie, sorry, there comes the lava. Don't mind me, folks. I'm just trying to get back from whatever dimension we're in currently. It's fine. You know, return to your duties. Everything's fine. And then presumably, well, once you've done that, then you're pulling through magma, and magma's a bit softer, so you can keep pulling through, and then, yeah, maybe you accidentally cut the Earth in half. Although, I guess the iron core might be quite hard to try and cut through. But
she is Wonder Woman.
But she is Wonder Woman, so maybe she could do it, right?
And I mean, the damage has already been done by this point, really, anyway.
What you've got so far through...
They're like
just fill it in, get a shovel.
The polyfiller.
Well, the good thing is that magma is the Earth's own polyfiller, so you don't even need to do that, right? It'll just go and then cover up the
Well, there is a great advert. Magma, the world's polyfiller.
So you get
sure Mount Vesuvius were delighted with that.
Yes, because they have a good PR board.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that's what would happen. You'd cause like massive volcanic activity and. But well, if you're far enough away from that, you'd probably just be like, the stars are moving in a funny direction. Like, is the Earth still spinning at this point? Because that in itself could be interesting if you just, like, took the Earth and stopped it from spinning. Like, because you would feel that.
That's actually...
Because that's a huge amount of force.
That's going to lead into my question.
Oh, is it?
Further questions.
Sorry, I'll
So what if you took said rope that's tied around the Earth and tied the other half around Mars? What would happen? So they're heading in different directions.
So they're in different directions. So the distance between Earth and Mars is getting is changing all the time. Sometimes we're fairly close, sometimes we're far away. How big is the string?
As
long as you need to be, nothing should happen, right? It'll get longer and shorter, right?
So we'll tie them together at a close point. What happens when they...
So it stays the same length, but you tie it together at a close point.
And the planets try to move apart.
So you've got a lot of tension happening in the cord. You've got two planets at either side. Mars is lower mass than the Earth. So
the Earth would just start to drag it?
You'd think the Earth would start to drag Mars, but then you'd get the same thing happening here where there'd be a lot of tension here. It would start to crack the Earth's crust. It would start to crack the Martian crust. There's no volcanic activity on Mars. That's fine.
I'm sure the Martians will be delighted.
Yeah. I mean, there's something they better tell Martian man.
It's nothing happened. I mean, there's no air and lots of radiation on Mars. It's not, you know, it's all kind of balanced. So yeah, you probably just start flinging Mars around, sort of the back of the Earth. So Mars orbit would be changed.
So it'd become a rather large and distant moon.
Yeah. Or a really weird conga line.
Well, but then at the same time, Mars is also pulling back on the Earth, right? So you basically. So you come into close approach, you make your connection, and then Earth starts to pull Mars, but Earth is also being dragged by Mars as well. So Earth starts to slow down, and that means that Earth's orbit is going to start getting smaller. So we're going to get closer to the sun, and then Mars is going to come round and pull us again, so we're going to get tugged, and we're going to end up being like a sort of, like a bowler being chucked.
This,
you know,
sounds an awful lot like it is when you have just your toddler on the reins and you're trying to walk one way but they're going off in a different direction.
That's almost exactly it.
Right down to the cutting them down to the core.
Yes.
Hopefully you don't end up in the sun.
No, yeah, I mean, well, if the mini guys you drag me into the sun, I'd be a bit worried.
Yes.
Where are we going?
Depends how you react, you might end up in the tabloids.
Yeah. This is also true.
Yeah, indeed.
Almost a perfect analogy.
So I think if you tied Earth and Mars together at that point, there's a very high chance that we both planets would end up in the sun.
There'd be a lot of questions about your actions.
You might be called to tribunal.
A government inquiry.
Why?
What was this for?
So, just sort of going back to that for a second. So assume that the rope goes around the Earth and Earth gets pulled like it does in the comics, so it doesn't break and it does just get towed along nicely. What would the impacts be of just travelling through, like, because you're distanced to like the sun or the moon or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you might pass planets because you're going at a fair speed compared to how the planets normally travel.
Yeah.
Presumably the moon would come with us.
Yeah, where's the moon then?
That's a good question.
The moon had long been destroyed by this point. There was no moon at this point.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Batman
blew it up. Okay. I mean, not having a moon is bad news.
Well, the moon got invaded by aliens, and Superman said to Batman, set off all the bat bombs on the moon. And Batman went, don't be ridiculous, I don't have bombs on the moon. And Superman went, don't be daft, you're Batman, of course, there's bombs on the moon. And Batman went, yeah, there is, so they blew them up.
I know exactly how paranoid you are, Bruce. Okay.
So Batman had blown up the moon by this point. So that was...
So what's happened to the seas, if there's no moon?
Exactly. There's no tides, right?
Yeah.
So the sun...
That's Aquaman's problem and no one cares about it.
So like,
so he's just running around shoving water.
So it's just, it's no surfing anymore. Okay, so if you're getting dragged through space and you're on an Earth that's still spinning, say, most of the feeling of the sort of the like your individual feelings as a person are more linked to the spin than they are to how you're moving, right? Because we're moving insanely fast right now, mm-hmm. and none of us care. And it's fine.
We've gotten used to it.
Yeah. Well, literally, like, as far as we're concerned, the motion is not important. What is important is the fact that we're on a planet that has gravity that keeps us to the ground, and we're on a planet that spins, so it gives us some of the, like, the atmospheric currents, and, you know, it can affect how things flow on the surface. That's basically it. So, yeah, as long as the Earth is still spinning, everything's probably fine. If the Earth's not spinning, that means we're in trouble.
Which leads me into my question. So my question is, having watched, there's an episode, I'm pretty certain there's an episode of Futurama where they stop the world spinning.
Uh-huh.
I'm just curious to what would happen. Not necessarily spinning.
I always imagined if it stopped, just stopped.
We'd all fall
over. Well, if you hit the brakes. But like, it's like if we stopped spinning on the axis that we are, like the, on the day.
Like the rotation. Yeah.
Rotation of the Earth. Stop spinning around the sun. That's another part of the question.
Yes.
And then the third part of the question is, what happens if we start spinning on a different axis?
Okay.
So, like, so rather than spinning with the poles at the top, we like start spinning like around two points on the equator. So
okay,
we were spinning.
That leads me back into one of my questions. Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay. Right. Well, I'll come to that at the end. So if we stop the world spinning, like, how do we stop it? What's stopping it from spinning?
I don't know.
Like, how do you imagine this happening? In
Futurama, I think they literally, you know how when you put like a pin into something and you spin and you attach a pin to the top of the globe and then the globe keeps spinning until eventually it just stops.
Right, okay. So someone's applying pressure.
Something is applying pressure to essentially stop the spin. Okay. Like, or a force is applied to basically go, nah.
So if you're doing it slowly enough, it's probably fine. If you did it really quickly, then we would always, all of us would feel like a really massive force pushing us in the other direction. So we'd kind of go, out the window or whatever, whatever direction that would happen to be.
Like an emergency stop.
Like an emergency stop.
Dibs on the wall.
Kind of from
Yes. Well, the spin rate is a lot quicker. So it's kind of bad.
So instant death for all of us.
We're talking Iron Man.
I think you're talking like, yeah, like a strawberry jam against the wall.
So, yeah. Everyone inside
would the screwed. Walls even still be standing?
Well, that's a good question, yeah. I mean, they're going to also feel like a big shock as like the Earth kind of goes, and stops.
Everything ripped from its foundations.
So everything's going to rip from its foundations. Things will fly apart through the shock waves.
World's worst domino push.
Yeah. You could do it slowly enough so that shock gets kind of buffered and we can kind of go, what's happening? Why is everything... Like, why are we doing this all of a sudden? It's all leading to the side as everything is coming to a stop. But then the problem with that is that once you've stopped, like, the Earth has stopped, but the atmosphere, your spheres keep spinning. Because it's not attached.
What was I saying?
So you might find yourself in, like, ridiculously strong winds because the air is still flowing, but you're standing still. And so you're like, shit, I can't stand up in this.
That eventually slow down, surely.
It would, but it would take a lot of time and there's not a lot of friction that's actually stopping it. The bits that stop the wind from moving are contact with the ocean and then contact with the land. So all our buildings would be in like the worst hurricane that ever happened for days and days and days. That's kind of bad.
So, and obviously with the stopping of the spinning, days would stop.
Yeah, so the sun would stay at the same point as the sky. Yes.
Would that have an effect? Like, would we have like a moon situation where one side would be warm and the other side would be cold?
So what would happen there? Now, because the planet had stopped spinning entirely, the sun would still move. It would just move really, really slowly because we're still moving around the sun, right? So, you know, if we have this bit facing the sun when we stop, when we move around half an orbit later, it will be the other side.
So literally years.
So a year and a day would be the same length, if you like, yeah. So because it's not moving,
so
but it's moving around.
6 months of light.
So you'd have 6 months of light and 6 months of darkness. Yeah. Like, if you imagine that we were all, like, exactly aligned this way, if you tilt the planet's axis, it's a bit different. Yeah. So, yes. So that you'd have that problem of, like, having 6 months of lots of sun and then 6 months of no sun.
So night time should be really cold.
Yes.
But you'd get a good sleep.
But but the night times would be so cold that the atmosphere would start to freeze out and rain on us. like everything, like not just the water, but the carbon dioxide. We'd get dry ice raining on us. We'd get oxygen raining on us.
But it'd be amazingly atmospheric.
Well, it wouldn't. The atmosphere would be gone.
Dry ice.
There's going to be precisely not atmospheric.
Well, atmospheric from an appearance point of view. Everyone's just walking out going, tonight, Michael, I'll be...
So aesthetically, floating off. Aesthetically very pleasing, but literally like...
But no one left alive to see it.
Like a few degrees above absolute zero.
That's the point. What would happen to gravity if the Earth stopped spinning?
The gravity would be fine. So that's just the mass, right? It doesn't matter.
So
the spin is not helping keep us on or anything, right? So that's fine. It's just that one side of the planet would have a really hot atmosphere and the atmosphere would be like, ow, this is too hot, and would start flowing to the other side. But at the same time, that other atmosphere is collapsed. So all the atmosphere would go over that way and go, oh, that's really cold, and then would collapse. So it's quite possible that all our atmosphere would end up on the other side until that was being illuminated by the sun again, and it'd go, oh, this is very hot again, and out it comes and do the same thing. So we'd kind of be passing our atmosphere back and forth very slowly.
So you'd get 6 months of scorching heat death and radiation because you've got no atmosphere shield, and the other side would be rains of ice.
Yeah,
that's good. Cool.
And what happens if the rotation change, like at the axis change?
So, well, the reason that we have seasons on the Earth is because of how the Earth is tilted on the rotation, right? So if you change that, then you just change the seasons, right?
Okay.
So if you were spinning, instead of spinning, the way we do, which is sort of at a slight angle to how we go around the sun.
Yeah, these arms aren't really working.
Yeah, I'm trying to describe them in the podcast. It's not working. You need a picture in your head, right? So if you were spinning like so that the poles were facing the sun rather than being facing away from the sun, then obviously the poles would melt. But you might find yourself with cold spots at the equator instead.
But the other part of the question is, what if we did work spinning on the poles?
Yeah.
What if, say, if it was like literally, as your point, in Ecuador and somewhere on the other side, and we started spinning that way? Like, the poles are still at the top and the bottom, but then they spin round.
Right, that's what Magneto did, and I was going to ask that.
Okay.
So he just made the poles go east to west.
Okay, so that's not going to be hugely problematic. Once you're in place, that's probably fine, because it's just a body spin around a body. That's all right. But while you're like busy like turning the planet around, that's obviously very bad. And again, the same thing happens as before when the Earth stops spinning. The atmosphere is like, shit, wait a minute, where's the ground? Okay.
To this humanizing of the Earth.
Yeah, well, it's kind of how it works for me.
Is it still needy?
It's still very codependent. And so you get these kind of weird effects where the wind is going much faster than the ground from your point of view. But once you were kind of set up and it was spinning that way, I can't see there being a huge problem.
Would it be a cataclysmic sort of weather event as well?
Yes.
Like flooding and, that's fine.
Yeah, because you'd find weather flows kind of going in places they're not meant to go.
Yeah.
So,
Your poles would also be hot, would they not, rather
yeah,
than
so
cold?
Yeah, so the biggest problem of all that is that the ice melts at the poles. And so sea level gets very high. So that's probably your biggest nightmare.
And that's what happens in the Ultimatum storyline, isn't it? It's like when he does that, New York suddenly absolutely flooded. And you lose half your characters at that point.
Mm.
Yeah, well, it's happening across the world, but that's where I remember it. I remember Spider-Man's story more than anything else, when he's trying to rescue as many people as he can, and at the end of it, you think he's been caught up in it as well. So,
yeah, so I think that's your biggest risk, just getting rid of all your ice. Although it would probably start freezing in other places. So if it floods anywhere near the equator, then you might start to see those parts of the equator starting to freeze. I'm not sure that's enough.
What's up, Fair City Podcast? This is Chris and Dan from Fresh Talk. Check us out at freshtalkpodcast.com.
That's right. And if you had any idea how long it took me and Dan to do that bumper, you would actually probably never listen to us.
It's totally true. Get him, Stoby.
Hey, Stoby, it's me, Jarrett. Go to JarrettGoesToTheMovies.com. Check out the podcast. Also, go to Rockstar Dad Show. Check that one out, too. It's freaking great. They're both great. Also, you just got a text and a Facebook message. And I probably better give you this phone back.
Hello, this is Jim.
And my name is Graham Chenjack.
And we're both responsible for the monstrosity that is A Bloody Mess Podcast.
We can be found at www.facebook.com/messpodcast, twitter.com/mess_podcast, Instagram is A Bloody Mess.
and we're our alternative Wednesdays to the Science of Fiction podcast, which is a must listen.
Cheen from Cheencast has got a question for us.
So how did he come up with that name?
Market research.
Everybody loves
it. It tested really well with the demographics.
So he's got a full paragraph here. So what he's saying is, space has been attracting the attention of mankind for thousands of years, from using it to navigate the world to inspiring religion. Without the knowledge of space, our civilization would be incredibly different. We wouldn't have many of the incredible structures of the world, from Stonehenge to the Great Pyramids of Giza, which cast a magnificent shadow over all that see it. Which brings me to my question. How big is Batista's dick? And there's Gene in a nutshell.
That is beyond my expertise. Next question, please.
Wow.
Okay, so Tom King from That King Thing and Back of the Grid podcast, he's asking about a game called The Division, which has got what's called the Green Poison, and it's a pathogen that is spread on Black Friday by contaminating dollar bills. Could something like that spread so fast as to affect the globe the way it is in the game? So in the game, it's a global thing that happens based on distribution of dollar bills that are contaminated. My initial gut on that is maybe at a certain point in time, but now it would be a lot harder because you'd have to contaminate Visa cards.
Yeah, we're kind of going cashless as a society, aren't we? Mm-hmm. So I guess it depends on what it is you choose to transmit your virus disease on. You pick the right thing. And if it's transmittable between humans...
That was my thinking, yeah.
Then it doesn't really matter as long as you get enough humans in one place, which we generally do. We have cities and we have airports. Airports are the worst because then you can fly your virus all over the planet, like in Planet of the Apes, which we talked about.
I love that. And
Pandemic, the game.
Yeah. So Pandemic, I think, is actually a fairly good representation of how...
Yeah.
Like, the various vectors for viruses go and, like, what, you know, disease control people have to try and do to solve the problem. It's really hard.
Yeah, that break, you just get screwed.
Yeah.
The graphics at the start or end of the first Planet of the Apes, start of the second one, where it shows you how it spreads and everything. I love that. I think it's so interesting. But yeah, that's the question, is that sort of...
Like, if we use cash in the way we did in the 90s, say, yes.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So... But then even then, would the dollar bill be effective? If it wasn't human-to-human transmission, would it be effective? It would only contaminate...
Well,
only
America.
It would only contaminate people who handle dollar bills, in which case it's people who come to the United States or who live there. So not really. But if it's transmittable between people, that's when it becomes... really.
It's infectious during the short incubation period, meaning it spreads between people with no initial symptoms. And it takes effect really quickly.
Yeah. So in that case, it would. Yeah. Yeah. That, you wouldn't really need to worry. That would happen even now. It wouldn't have to be a lot because dollar bills are still very popular used. And
yeah, you get, like you say, airports. You get somebody highly contagious or infectious, put them into an airport, which is hundreds and hundreds of, like, depending on the airport, thousands of people.
If it's an international airport, that's it.
Yeah. Game changer.
It's all over the place.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, that was a good question. I like that one. Stu? You got anything?
No.
No? Okay.
I'm tapped out.
There we go.
Literally just remembered it. So, we've seen a lot of these 60s movies back when science wasn't as well known. You see all these Bond villains saying, give us $1 million or I will send a nuke down into the core of the Earth and blow up the Earth.
Mm.
What would happen if someone drilled down into the centre of the Earth and sent a nuclear bomb down there?
Not an asteroid this time.
I believe that was addressed in the film The Core, which I believe is a very scientifically accurate... No. So, if you could get there, right? So just to be clear, right? We've got the crust of the Earth, which is like tens of kilometres thick.
Yeah.
And then once we get through the crust, we get into the mantle, which is kind of the gooey stuff that comes out of volcanoes. And then further down, it starts to get thicker and hotter. And then you have the liquid core and the solid core. And this is what we're talking about trying to get to.
Hmm.
It's really hot, right? We can't drill that far without all the stuff melting.
Are you saying that the people who drilled a hole in an asteroid in space can't drill a hole to the core of the Earth and do that, the same thing to the planet?
Yes.
Okay.
But let's assume that they've figured out the heat problem or whatever, and they've got like heat-resistant drills or whatever. If you could deliver a nuclear device to the centre of the Earth's core and blow it up, what are you going to do? You're going to basically make a shockwave inside the Earth. The Earth is kind of full of shockwaves of its own. There's a lot of energy down there already. The magma itself is going to kind of contain the explosion. It's not going to be able to travel very far. It'll feel the shockwave, but it'll deaden the shockwave. There's no radioactivity that's going to come out. It's all stuck in the Earth. The Earth is full of radioactive material anyway. Fine.
So what you're saying is James Bond went to all that effort for no reason.
I believe so. I'm not sure what you could do to the Earth's core that was really damaging with a nuclear weapon.
Like, even if you did manage to drill a big hole like that, you're then just going to be left with just piles of stuff around the side of it.
I've made a mountain!
Like, you literally have made a mountain. Yeah. Yeah, what are you going to do with that?
Make roads.
Fill in all the
gardens. You've got that big lasso thing.
Steve was asking, how much food do you need in storage to have a human survive? And what types of food? And can you grow plants, veg in underground bunkers, or do they need natural sunlight?
To answer the last part, you can grow
hydroponics.
Yeah, so hydroponics is part of it, but we can reproduce the solar spectrum in bulbs quite well now, so you don't need that.
You get quite a lot of in cities now, like the people have basically taken over like underground facilities, whatever, like cellars and stuff, and they've turned them into like
cannabis plants.
Little farms and stuff like that. Yeah. You see on CBeebies all the time.
Typical dad.
The cannabis plants.
I mean, underground is one thing. We're talking about doing things like this in Mars. So there's definite plans for like, okay, we're not going to be able to sit on the Martian surface. It's too hazardous. If we want to have a permanent settlement there, then we need to be able to grow crops underground. And this would be how you do. You'd have a bulb that has the same kind of spectrum of light as the sun. You need to make sure the soil is okay. So yeah, I mean, in principle, you should be able to do it. It's just, you need a lot of sunlight. And the sun gives us a lot of light for free. In terms of how much food do you need, this is where I'm not particularly...
Have you watched The Martian recently?
This is where I was going. It's like, so you can't just do it in a tent like you do in The Martian?
Yeah, with poo.
Well, I mean, so making Martian soil with just your own crap, I have problems with it because, well, one of the biggest problems...
From an ethical standpoint...
if you want to smear shit in the soil, that's your deal. But... the problem I have is that the soil itself, when you start, is, it's extremely hostile to organisms generally, right? It's made of, primarily what we call perchlorates, which is like a specific type of chlorine salts, magnesium salts. It's really nasty stuff. So just adding a bunch of organic material to that is not going to fix that problem. Like, you're going to have to find some way of removing some of these harsher chemicals. And also a potato-based diet. For that long, like, unless he's got some kind of minerals or like a multivitamin he's taken, even then they're not very effective. I have the impression he'd be malnourished before that he got his rescue.
I mean, he didn't look great by the end.
No, he didn't.
He kind of looked like thin Thor.
So, yeah, I'm not sure if you could survive on that. Because he had rations of other stuff, didn't he?
Yeah,
it wasn't just potatoes. So it depends how much of that he had and how we could supplement his diet. But a potato-based diet by itself will cause malnutrition. Guaranteed. You need protein, folks.
So better pass that back to Steve that you can't just eat potatoes forever.
I'm sure he's listening right now. Just forget about it.
Kev's asked, and I can answer this one actually. If a meteor/asteroid, delete as applicable, struck the Earth, how big would it have to be, bonus points for your maw joke, to cause an extinction level event?
As big as your maw.
Aye. No, the answer to that is he will already know because he'll have listened to episode one of this season.
Do you know, seeing as you're in episode one?
Was it not anything more than you either? It was either 1 mile or 6 miles. I can't remember.
It was a kilometer, but yeah,
a kilometer.
Yeah, but yeah. So basically, if you're a kilometer bigger, that's the rule of thumb we have for saying that's potentially causing like existential risk.
The second part is further, would we suffocate due to the particles in the air, or could it block out the sun? It's his other two questions.
We wouldn't suffocate. It would certainly block out the sun. It wouldn't completely block it out. It would make it a lot less bright, and it could reduce the global temperature by an awful lot, in the same way like a nuclear blast would do the same thing. So, yes.
So the whole world would experience a Scottish summer, basically.
Yeah.
Best 2 days of my life.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm tapped out at this point.
Yeah. Let's see what else we've got in there. Your document. Unless you guys have got anything. Mm-hmm. Anything more?
Hey, well, I've got one that's going on in the comics at the moment, so I don't know how they've resolved this one, because they haven't yet. So, there's a character in the comics, the Dark Batman, who's basically every evil thing that Batman ever did rolled anyone. And he
sounds like a great guy.
Yeah. And he has recently in the comics punctured a hole in this in space itself,
mm-hmm.
and dark antimatter, specifically dark antimatter, is flooding in through the hole.
Okay.
So
what is dark antimatter?
Well, it's antimatter, but he can't see it because it's dark.
There's not much light out in space.
Should I just give you my degree? Sorry. So wait, okay. Let's get some stuff down on the
ground. Break it down for him.
So you've got matter and you have antimatter, and if matter and antimatter meet, it causes annihilation, and that's like the purest form of energy release. So all the energy that's contained in the particles, mc squared, gets released. We have a thing called dark matter, which we don't know what it is. We know it's there because we know that that our description of how galaxies rotate and our description of the universe generally requires us to have some missing matter to make the models fit. Although it's either that or that our understanding of gravity is totally wrong. It looks like our understanding of gravity is good because it fits everything else, but we're missing this matter. So dark matter is this thing we've never seen, but we think it's there. So we now have a thing called dark antimatter. So the assumption is that if dark matter meets dark antimatter, do they explode? I guess they do.
I suppose it should. What it really does is turn you into the evil you.
Okay. I didn't see that coming, sorry.
Do they explode or do they implode? If it's like hidden and the opposite.
Maybe. Who knows?
You'll have to find out next by getting the next issue available at Big Dog Games.
Yeah. On it.
Like a car bonnet.
That's a good one.
You say you're all tapped out, Stu?
I got nothing.
Yep.
I'm going to go more real.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear war, as obviously poses a threat to humans because we just fire nukes at each other. How much of a threat does it pose to the planet as a whole? Because there is the... I think it's said that a big nuclear war would end the world, but mm-hmm. would it? Because nukes are tested all the time, so there is nuclear explosions going on in the world and mm-hmm. we still rotate.
Yeah.
So would it actually end the world, or is it just that we'd just kill each other?
So it depends what you mean by end the world, right? If you think end the world means that no life is left, we could probably get to the point where there's nothing more than just like basic microbes. And then the world would come back to itself later, and like millions of years later, then all that organic stuff would start to repopulate. The Earth would still be there. We would blow up. It used to be said that we had enough nuclear weapons to take the crust off the Earth's surface. I don't know if that's true, but we could certainly do a lot of damage. But it would be there. It wouldn't be like alive in the sense that it is now. It would just be, it would be barren rock. Yeah. But I don't think we can blow up the planet as in like blow it up into chunks. Like that's a huge amount of
damage. I'm sure we talked about that before last series.
Yeah.
You can call him out for not listening.
No, no. I don't remember. So. But it just sounded familiar there when he was talking about that. And I'm sure I was asking, what would the explosion have to be to actually break the world or something? Yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot more energy than we can currently use. Yeah.
So if we stripped Earth back to the microbes, like you were saying, and Earth kept spinning millions of years of time, would the same things happen again? Like the same development of life? Or would it be different based on what we've left behind?
It would definitely be different because they'd be developing in a high radiation environment.
Right.
So the kind of microbes that would survive would be the ones who are best suited to living in high radiation environments. The worry is that,
we wouldn't be worried about
We wouldn't be worried about it. We're not here, right? But the worry for the microbes is that they live in a high radiation environment and they get used to it. Millions of years go by and the radiation starts to go away. So if it goes away slowly enough, they can adapt and become used to low radiation environments. If it goes away quickly, they struggle. The story about whether we would end up with something that looks like this, like we end up with, intelligent life again, probably, I don't know. I don't think we can even answer that question. My gut feeling is probably not. I think that the way that intelligent life works or how it gets built is it's incredibly lucky and it's just the right circumstances happening at the right time. I'm not sure that would happen again. You might end up having quite a rich biosphere full of different kinds of animal life and plant life, and you probably would find things that look like things we recognize because nature tends to solve the same problem in the same way whenever it gets the chance. We also have at least 2 billion years before the Earth becomes totally uninhabitable anyway, because the sun is getting hotter all the time. Right? That's just because that's what stars do, is they get older, they get a bit warmer. It takes long enough, though, that within about 2 billion years, the temperature of the Earth starts to get high enough that we start to lose the more complex life like us, the less complex life, the microbes, everything eventually is gone by then.
It's absolutely crazy to think that,
It will go.
It
will go. And then a billion or maybe 2 billion years after that, the Earth itself will go.
That's mental.
Yeah.
That's depressed me.
I got a quick question, just to sort of, going on a side bend off into, we've not really talked about aliens, okay. This one, which is obviously your special.
I do have a book on the subject.
You got a book on it, yeah. Yeah. Where is it available again?
It's available at all good bookshops.
Yeah.
I mean, them exist.
So you watched the movie Evolution.
Have I watched that? I'm not sure I have.
Okay, but basically the concept is that they essentially have this meteorite that lands on Earth, and it basically has bacteria that are formed not from as carbon based life forms but another one of the elements. I can't remember which one it is. It's like the one next to it, so it's,
is it silicon?
Possibly silicon. Was one of the two. I'm just wondering, what is like, could essentially you see like the evolution of creatures off that non-carbon based thing? Like obviously we're all carbon based. Could there be another element that could then go on to become a species or an evolutionary process?
So people used to talk about this a lot back in the sort of 70s and 80s, this idea of what they called a shadow or a dark biosphere, and this idea that there were maybe two biospheres in the Earth. One was carbon-based and one wasn't, and that we just weren't looking for the other one. That's less popular than it used to be. The chemistry behind carbon-based life, basically, it's really easy to build long chains of carbon molecules, and that is just one of the most important things we can do in terms of building life. Like, we're basically just long chains of carbon with hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen and phosphorus and sulfur kind of mixed in the right places. If you said, right, you're not allowed carbon, build it with something else. Yeah. I mean, you could maybe do it with silicon, but its properties are just not as good as carbon at building these kinds of
things. Very quickly trying to fork out what world it was actually was that was used.
And failing.
But yeah, so people have
nitrogen based.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It would be stupid to say it.
It's been a while since I watched movies. I didn't come to it straight away.
Well, so I mean, you can right away say that okay, carbon, like your covalent bonds go back to your standard.
Oh yeah, Mr. Conquest.
Mr. Conquest. So you've got your because carbon then has, you can have, say, take an example of hydrogen. You can have methane, which is CH4. Nitrogen doesn't have ammonia, which is NH3. So you only have three possible bond sites as opposed to four. So building chains is harder because to make a bond, make a chain, you need two. And so you've already used those two, so you've only got one left to bond with. So you're already limiting the chemistry you can do because you have less bonds to play with. So, yeah, the study of kind of looking for other types of life on other planets, a lot of people have been trying to figure out, right, okay, if we just try and step back as far as we can, what sorts of chemistry should we be looking for? And they have a big list, but carbon tends to hit the top of the list because of the fact that it's just so good at doing the things that it does for us. So, yeah, there's a fairly good chance that if there is life on another planet somewhere, it will use carbon in some way, either as its base or as one of the sort of really helpful molecules that that helps it go.
Cool. Or just thought I'd ask.
I can almost see you breaking out into sweat trying not to deep dive into the your specialist subject here.
Yeah, a little bit.
Felt like you had something. No.
I forgot what it was now. Story of the life.
I think that's everything.
Said evolution. Was
That's everything I've got anyway.
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Are you definitely tapped out this time?
Yeah, definitely done
this time. You got any questions you want to answer?
Ask yourself.
Have you got any questions for us?
How does the offside rule work?
I know how the offside rule works.
Do you do it now with VAR?
Not now. VAR just kind of changes everything.
VAR hasn't changed anything. It's just another matter of review now.
Referee. Trained, qualified referee.
There we go. No, I'm out of stuff. I can't think of anything else.
Cool. That's been fun. Where are we at?
We're at just coming up to 50 minutes.
Oh, okay, that was quick.
No.
Okay. Cool. Okay.
Okay, let's go with the old sign off then. So, Andrew, where can people find you on the internet?
The dark web.
If you want to interact with me, at AndrewDHD on Twitter, at the AFcast if you want to find my project, and the NFL is a world that you're interested in.
Or Steve farting on the recording, if that interests you as well.
We edit those out.
And keep them for our own collection.
It's funny because Andrew was on episode 2, I think it was, of First Lady Podcast, and when I was editing back, because he'd recorded his own track, when I was editing back, I could hear the bits he hadn't muted. And so the podcast starts, and I was like, and we've got Andrew on the recording. He'd muted Skype, but not Audacity.
It was a belter of a burp as well.
It fell off my seat when I was editing it. It was beautiful.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Stu, where can people find you?
As ever, you can find me on Twitter at Barg the Ogre, doing very little.
That's not all one hashtag. It's just
that's Barg the Ogre. That's a long handle.
It's what actually you tweet.
Don't talk about my handle online. I've already been asked how big my rod is.
Get a handle of yourself. Stuart, where can people...
That fell flat.
They all do. That's the running theme. They all do. I assume it's deliberate and people just hide the laughter.
It's really hard to hide it sometimes, but we still manage.
Yeah, good. Professionals. Stuart, where can people find you online?
You can find us at the Rodan Big Dog Books podcast or Big Dog Books on Facebook.
Excellent. And Forgan, thanks for answering all those questions. Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at DH4GAN. That's the number 4.
And if you have got more questions for him, fire away. Fire away. So you can find us at SciOfi Podcast on Twitter, or you can find us at fcpod.net/thescienceoffiction. And on fcpod.net, you'll also find Big Dog Books Podcast, American Fit Podcast, and the other ones there as well. Bloody Mess, Chincast, FC Podcast as well. I think if I've missed anyone, I'm truly sorry.
And obviously, we want to thank the guys who've been able to provide us with this lovely location.
Yep, so yep. Light Press Media and Design for all your media content and design needs in Perth. Give them a shout. They've provided us with the recording studio where we have done the entire season in one day. Five episodes. Excellent. Well, thanks everyone for being here. It's been great fun, and thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.